on this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we talk about Alex Bregman finally finding employment, a 3-year deal with the Boston Red Sox with opt-outs. We talk about all things Bregman to Boston. Also talk about Nick Pivetta signing with the Padres, Kenley Jansen going to the Angels to collect some more saves, run through some other moves, give you the good, the bad, the ugly, and yes, I give Jake some more homework on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world, always in the best shape of its life. I'm Jake Mitz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and spring training has sprung. You know, over the winter, I got really into gardening. There is something joyous and fulfilling and enthralling about putting a seed in a empty garbanzo bean can of dirt and watching that thing bloom and blossom into a plant.
What is the baseball equivalent of that? I don't know.
It is what's happening right now, Jordan, as we are in the two states with spring training. You are in the Cactus League in Arizona. I am in the Grapefruit League in Florida, watching baseball players barely do baseball, but it's the start of something. It is the inkling of something. It is a seed of a bigger dream of a lovelier tomorrow.
Yes. And I think the key element there, the most important parallel, is that patience is most certainly necessary as we are far away from the finished product or where we actually want to end up going. But yes, it has begun. The process, the slow march towards opening day, is officially underway. We're doing it. The baseball players are sort of doing some baseball things, as at least I believe all the pitchers and catchers have reported by now as we record this on Thursday morning. Jake, you've been down in Florida, obviously, for a while. You've spent some time at Yankees camp. We'll talk a little bit about that later. But Jake, even though we're in spring training mode now, this is really the off-season hot stove finale, as on this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we will discuss Alex Bregman finding employment. So happy for him. That will be our first topic. We got a couple other big moves to talk about, and don't worry. We got the good, the bad, the ugly coming your way later. But Jake, let's begin. We did it. It happened. Alex Bregman found a team. It is our opener.
Eat your heart out, Kanye West. The Jews are back. Friend of the tribe, Alex Bregman finds himself a gig. Shabbat shalom, chaver, as the diminutive third baseman, the plucky gamer, the grinder from Albuquerque, is shipping up to Boston to join the Red Sox on a 3-year deal worth $120 million. Kind of. There are deferrals. We'll talk about that in a second. Okay. But he will be playing second base for the Red Sox, which is particularly interesting.
Gold glove third baseman going to play second base. And I think that is an important place to start before we get into the contract and, you know, how we ended up, you know, the Scobo. We got a lot to cover here with Alex Bregman. But I do think the people that weren't necessarily following this specific pursuit and were maybe caught off guard by being like, whoa, what's going on? Well, what do you mean Alex Bregman's playing second base? Alex Cora basically told us this at the winter meetings. He was extremely open at that stage when it did not appear like Alex Bregman would need to be. Remember, early in his free agency, he was like, oh, he's willing to play another position. And we're like, why would he need to? There are enough teams that need a third baseman that should just want to sign Alex Bregman as the gold glove third baseman that he is. But Alex Cora said at the winter meetings when asked about him, like, yeah, obviously he knows Bregman well. He's like, I always viewed him as a middle infielder. I thought he could be an awesome second baseman. Clearly, he's become a fantastic third baseman. But the fit for Boston always made more sense at second. Now, the reason it took this long, I guess we can get into that, right? Well, why do we think it took this long? When we talked earlier this week about where the Bregman free agency was and where we thought it was going, you know, you said you thought it was going to end back in Houston and thought he wouldn't settle for a shorter term deal. I postulated that a short term deal could be possible at a place like Boston. I ended up being right, but this is a hefty short term deal. I mean, this is a lot bigger than what Matt Chapman settled for when we made that parallel. I mean, this is a much bigger contract that he ended up getting.
And that's my biggest takeaway, right? Like, I thought he was going to go back to Houston because at no point did I think that a short-term deal of this magnitude would exist. I mean, 3 years, 120, 40 a year. Now, there are a lot of deferrals that's going to push the value, according to Buster Olney at ESPN, closer to 390, right? Which is still pretty significant. And I think that that's the surprise. We postulate about this all the time. This is a style of contract that if any big free agent lasts past New Year's, we're like, well, what if you just bump the AAV up to an outrageous level? But we've really never seen it like this. Now, the comparison, the Trevor Bauer Dodgers deal is the one that looks the most similar in terms of like a 3-year deal for a free
Scherzer's
agent.
Scherzer's Mets contract was
Scherzer's Mets
also. Mm-hmm.
Yep. You just don't see it a lot. The Scherzer one was a little different just because of how close he was to 40. But like for Bregman to take this deal really does feel significant to me. I still think he'd opt, right? He has an opt out after each of the next 3 years. If he puts up a good season, he'll opt and he'll try and get that longer term deal similar to what happened to Blake Snell, right? Following that kind of blueprint. But on the other hand, right, it can go bad. He can fall on a banana peel. He could get space jammed. He could lose his cleats. Like, he could be bad. And that's where the $30 million over the next 2 years as the floor helps him here. Now, at the end of the day, it seems like the Tigers offered him a 6-year deal.
So let's before we get to his fit on the Red Sox and Bregman, the player, let's talk about the other offers here, right? Because this is important. This is where when we're going to get into the Scobo and whether Scott Boras did his job well here. Based on the reporting, we know some of the other offers that he had that he turned down. And we understand that the Tigers reportedly offered 6 years, $171.5 million. Now, that's a $28.5 million AAV that is nowhere close to 40. But 6170 is, you know, more than what that Astros offer that had been sitting there for a long time and seemingly never got increased. That was more along the lines of what we thought he would kind of be shooting for at the start of the offseason. And it seems like the Tigers, who clearly were reluctant to pursue long-term contracts for basically anybody else during this winter, they got to a pretty big number. So what do we make of him? And then we can get to the Cubs. The Cubs also reportedly offering something closer to this one, where it was a 4-year, $120 million deal with opt-outs after the second and third year. So why do you think, I guess we'll find out, we'll hear from Bregman, but does it surprise you that Bregman opted for this shorter term with Boston when the Tigers seemingly offered a longer term contract that we kind of thought he was going to be in line for?
Right. Like if you had told me at the beginning of the winter he ends up with that deal from the Tigers, that would not have surprised me. That felt within range, and it would have felt like a understandable conclusion to this whole thing. To me, there's two takeaways. One, he doesn't want to live in Detroit. Like I think that that's a real thing. There's a chance he just doesn't want to live in Detroit. I love Detroit. I think it's an underrated city. I like going there. I would way rather live there than Boston, and it's not even close. You know my distaste for the city of Boston. However, that might not be the case for Alex Bregman. The other takeaway is I just think he would rather play for Alex Cora than A.J. Hinch. A.J. Hinch, manager of the Tigers, who was a skipper with the Astros, I'm not speaking with any knowledge, there's just a chance that's a pretty frayed relationship, right? With how things ended with Hinch in Houston. There's a chance that they are not on the same page. And it's clear that Bregman has a much closer relationship with Cora based upon the reporting that we've seen, right? Mm. And so I think that that is also a factor here. Otherwise, like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me unless Bregman, okay, what do we know about Alex Bregman? He believes in himself to a comical degree. Like, this is a guy who wears number two. As I said in the last podcast, he wears number two because he was a second pick. And what is he doing with his contract? He's betting on himself, right? He's making $40 million or $30 million true value in the first year, and then he opts, and then he goes and gets the bigger deal that he really wants. That's, in my mind, the process that he must have been going through, where it's like, oh, why would I take this Tigers deal if I could just opt a year from now, and I'm going to be an MVP finalist, and I'm amazing, right?
I hear all that, and maybe we'll get some clarification on his relationship with Cora compared to his relationship with Hinch and city preferences, committing long term to a city, right? I mean, versus having more of the flexibility to try something. But the other two things that I think are important are ballpark, But I think even more important than ballpark and where you would want to be hitting for a long time, because obviously if he gets the long-year deal with the Tigers, like he has the money in the bank. It doesn't matter if he suddenly, his slugging suddenly drops 100 points. But I think more relevantly is the competition and the competitive window. And as we kind of zoom out and talk about Alex Bregman, the baseball player, like as I wrote about at the beginning of the offseason, this guy only knows winning. It sounds cliche, but it's more true about him than literally any other player. I mean, this is someone who has been on winning teams since he was 12. I mean, he just doesn't, you know, he's winning gold medals with Team USA as a teenager. He's winning in high school. He's winning at LSU. He's never, I mean, obviously his career in Houston coincides directly with their rise to the top of the American League. He's played more playoff games, you know, through his age 30 season than every single player in baseball history, not named Derek Jeter. And so I can imagine him looking at the Red Sox and being like, you know what? Yeah, the Tigers were in the playoffs last year and not the Red Sox. But based on the off seasons and based on the situations and based on, you know, the upside of winning in a place like Boston and the roster that they've assembled, not that the Tigers don't necessarily have a bright future with maybe an easier path to contention in the AL Central relative to the AL East, but I can imagine Bregman really likes the idea of like winning as a Red Sox. Like that tracks with him and like the possibilities there and winning in the AL East seems like something that he would absolutely love and embrace that challenge, whether it's for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever. That makes sense to me. That's where that fit, I think, does make a ton of sense. And while the roster positionally is interesting, if he's willing to play second base there, we can get into that too. But that's why I thought the Boston fit really did make sense once it became clear that they were at least entertaining it.
And I think he'll offer some clarity and we'll get some clarity once he speaks to the media about the why. Yeah. Because yeah. I think if he had chosen the Tigers offer over the Red Sox offer, there are reasonable motivations behind that type of decision. And I would have been like, oh, that makes sense. I get it. And I think for this, to make this decision, I also get it, but I need answers. I need reasons like to fully comprehend that. And as I sit here at Yankees camp and not at Red Sox camp, it's a little bit harder to try and figure that out. Briefly, I want to touch on Alex Bregman, dude who knows how to win. It's so lazy and cliche, and I hate that it's true. Because when I say he just is a winning player, like I immediately want to punch myself in the mouth. And like when you said it, I wanted to punch my camera and throw my computer into the bay. But when you are around players and you talk to players who have been around Bregman, it's a will thing. It's a destination thing. He understands how to get to that point. Like he will not be bad. He refuses to be on a team that is bad, right? Now in baseball, you can't go full Tom Brady and like throw everybody on your back. I get that. But if we're talking dudes you want on your team in the playoffs, dudes to drag you there, like Bregman's really, really high on that list. Now look, I'd rather have Shohei Ohtani. You know, I'd rather have like better players who are not never been to the playoffs. Like, yeah.
Well, and still, and this though, this is the thing. And I think, okay, yeah, it's Alex Bregman doesn't equal winning. Obviously, there was a lot of other reasons the Astros and LSU and Team USA were winning gold medals. It wasn't just him. But I do
think accumulating
now,
pieces, you're accumulating reasons, you're accumulating forces. It's
yes. And also, I think that now it's just a really interesting pairing because Alex Bregman doesn't have to necessarily prove anything. I mean, yeah, he's going to be making $40 million and the Red Sox are going to expect him to be this leader on and off the field. But the Red Sox have to prove to him that they are a team that, you know, is worthy of Alex Bregman in some senses. And I know that sounds extreme, but because of how extremely disappointing and mediocre this amazing franchise has been in recent years, they have to go prove that they can get back to being one of the actual powerhouses of baseball, because that has just not been the case recently. And I think now, after the offseason they've had and what they have coming, they have the roster to do that, but they have to go out and prove it.
But what's weird now is it feels almost too soon to have this conversation, but the second this deal is agreed to, the Red Sox are now almost trying to swoon him for the opt-out decision to try and convince him to stay if he plays well, right? where it's like, it's all leading to a math problem for Bregman a year from now, where he needs to balance how well he played with his options. How did the Red Sox look, right? What does the market look like? And every little thing is going to play in that decisions. Now, it might not. Similar, we said this with Soto, right? And in the end, it is just the biggest number. But I do think that it is understandable to start even looking ahead to the opt-out decision. Let's talk about Bregman fitting in with the Red Sox. So what makes the most sense for the roster is for Rafi Devers to move to first base. Okay? I feel pretty strongly about that.
I don't agree with you, but okay.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I mean, you play out your description of the best case scenario.
I just think that, okay, so then you're moving Rafi to first, you're moving Casas to DH every day, mostly.
And I just think that that's we just pretend like he doesn't exist.
Kind of have to, right? But I understand, given the pieces they have, if you want to get Yoshida at bats and get the most out of the rest of the money that's on that deal, yes, you have to DH him, you have to have Casas at first. But in the event that one of these players gets hurt or misses time, you could certainly see a scenario where this gets reshuffled. Like, here, let me put it this way.
Sure.
How many games this year does Alex Bregman start at not second base?
I don't think very many, barring injury. I mean, I think that this is another thing that Cora has been clear about and the Red Sox have been clear about. Do I think Devers is going to play third base for the next 10 years? No, but I think that they've said it and I believe them when they say that you don't give him that contract that they gave Devers to be a first baseman. And I think that the fact that Bregman, this is why they're even considering Bregman. Remember, yes, they have these top prospects that are maybe coming, whether it's a Christian Campbell, is he ready to play second? Whether it's a Marcelo Meyer, ready to take over at short or second? It's not like they have a awesome second baseman right now, you know? I mean, they have David Hamilton was like okay last year. Vaughn Grissom, by the way, let's remember that they traded Chris Sale for Vaughn Grissom, and we thought, okay, there we go. This is before their farm system explodes to the point that it does, right, over the past year. But obviously, no one was thinking about Christian Campbell at that point. But it's like, all right, Vaughn Grissom, here we go. He's a young hitter. He could be our second base. He's like so far out of the picture now, which is fine. But Bregman fits because they believe he can play second. And now we're looking at a lineup where if Yoshida's batting sixth or seventh, okay, we're looking at one of the better lineups in the American League. And I think defensively, I don't think Devers is awesome, but I don't think he's catastrophically bad. And I think that this is a unique fit and why clearly Bregman is willing to do it. And Cora kind of sees this as a vision. I think now what's really interesting with Boston is what it does mean for those young players. We talked about kind of the maybe discord within the front office and ownership, which is Breslow believing that, you know, Christian Campbell could have 500 plate appearances in the big leagues this year. Can Roman Anthony be in the big leagues for much of this year? Where will we see Marcelo Meyer? I don't know. That's going to depend on some of those other players on this bottom part of the roster, whether that's Rafaela, whether that is David Hamilton. But now you're looking at a pretty core, you know, infield. And by the way, speaking of health, I mean, Trevor Story is the bigger question there in terms of what we're definitely getting from. If anything, I think it might be more likely we see Bregman at shortstop than third base.
Yeah.
If there's, you know, because of injuries. So I think all of that is interesting. But I think it's more that's just like, no, they didn't have an obvious answer at second base. And so Bregman is clearly a pretty gigantic upgrade there.
Boston. Good job. Good job. You did it.
Good job, John Henry. Yeah.
Good
and they're,
job.
They're, you know, into the luxury tax now, and they have a situation now where they don't have to worry about what Alex Bregman's going to look like when he's 35. You know, they have all these other prospects going. So if he goes in a year from now, presumably they have this next wave will be even more ready to contribute. So, yeah, I love it across the board. I think it completes an offseason where they were very, very busy early, did a lot, but hadn't actually spent money yet, and you thought that This was where you actually finally act like the Red Sox again. Because getting Garrett Crochet is awesome. It costs you a lot of prospects. He's making like $5 million this year, if that. So we didn't really see them pushing financially in the way that we've all been begging them to. And now this is a version to do that. And I think, too, like with Bregman, like he's just also an interesting player. Of course, he fits the ballpark well. I'm excited to see what he becomes defensively at second. I am curious how his offense, the most interesting thing about his year last year offensively was that he just stopped walking for the first time in his career. He has had elite contact skills since he was like 10. That has not changed. His ability to put the bat on the ball is as good as almost anybody in the league. The power has kind of fluctuated a little bit, but last year he just stopped walking. I don't think he lost that skill. I can imagine in the ballpark and in a little bit more of a comfortable situation, he's going to get back to putting up, I think, a much more impressive overall offensive line. And I think he's an awesome fit here, and it's going to make the AL East all the more interesting.
That's the thing, dude. The AL East is at its best when the Sox are giving a crap.
Yeah, relevant. Yeah.
When they're trying, when they're spending money. I mean, this is one of the top 5 to 3 franchises in the sport, right? Mm-hmm. Full stop. And when they operate that way, it's more interesting for the game. And I'm happy that they decided to spend money on a good player. Scobo.
Let's do it.
And then we'll take a break.
Yeah. So the Scott Boras scoreboard all off season. We are tracking Scott Boras's wins, losses, and draws. You can't, it's very binary, or I guess if we're including draws, you know what I mean?
Not binary.
It's not about the size. Was this a win for Scott Boras? Was this a loss? Was this a draw? We gave him a fat L for the short contract that he ended up getting Pete Alonso. But I think a key distinction in that one is that there wasn't anyone even coming close to offering him a long-term contract. Whereas in this case, because of that Tigers offer, it seems that there were long offers on the table, and this is what he was decided was best for his client. And another thing to remember about Bregman is that before he hired Scott Boras, he had already signed an $100 million extension earlier in his career. So he has already made more money than most players have before they even get to free agency, which maybe made it even easier for him to take a contract like this rather than trying to... I mean, of course, this is more money than most people can conceive of, but if you're talking about maximum earnings, like, he has already banked $100 million in a way that most guys getting free agency haven't. That said, I think this is a dub. I think in the genre of these short contracts, I think this is pretty impressive to get $40 million a year. like I understand he obviously offers more defense value than Pete Alonso. I'm astonished that he is going to be making, what is it, $14 million more this year than Pete Alonso. Maybe that's a stupid take. Because, yeah, the defense is worth that much more than Pete Alonso being a bad first baseman. But offensively, I don't know if they're that different, you know? Like, that's what's wild to me. So, I don't know. Do you disagree with me? Either way, I mean, this is a W for me on the Scobo. What do you think?
I lean closer to draw. Here's why I like it, and then I'll say why I don't. I like it because he gave Bregman options, right? That is the job of the agent, is to give your player a choice. Bregman had options from 4 teams of various styles of contract. And in the end, he made a decision. And that is the whole point of this. That's good. The reason it's not good is the deferrals here. I hate talking about them, but they're relevant if the reporting is correct. The actual value is around $30 million, not $40 million. Still a good chunk of change. But the idea that, okay, so if he's going to make $30 million and Pete's making $30 million, it's just one extra year. It's just the Alonso contract with a year and a ton of deferrals, so it looks better in a headline, right? Yeah. That's weird, because you'd definitely rather have Bregman if you say they're somewhat comparable from a total offensive production standpoint. Bregman has more defensive value. And if you want to just give him all those bonus points for being a winner, then I think that it should be higher than that. So that's just why I lean draw. But
yeah, I hear that. I guess what I'm thinking is just like, if he had just taken that Tigers contract, what would we be saying? I think in that case, if he had just taken the Tigers contract and we had no reporting about him getting these other short-term offers, like, I don't know if I'd be calling that a win, or I think in that case, I'd almost be more likely to call it a draw, because I'd be like, yeah, that's kind of what I expected. You know, like, yeah, the Tigers gave him 6 years, 170. Okay, yeah, that's about right. Whereas in this case, he got the offers. And then, I mean, did Boras tell him take the short-term deal? Maybe. I don't know. Did Bregman decide to take the the one that had all the deferrals? I think, yeah, yes, right? He made that decision. So that's why I lean Wynn, because the offers were there, which clearly was not the case for Pete. The market did not achieve the market that was being, you know, touted earlier in the offseason.
How do you feel about this?
It seems like that actually did exist for Bregman.
How do you feel about this? Let's pause on it and let's ask around.
Ooh,
we're in baseball land, right? I'm going to ask some people today.
Is this a win? We'll let you know next week. So we won't officially put it on the Scobo just yet. Yeah. Stop Wars does still have JD Martinez and Jose Iglesias as his most notable clients left. But obviously, this is the real finale to the Scobo in some ways. But we aren't going to go too quick. That's fine. I'm leaning dub. You're leaning draw. That's fine. You let us know, baseballovercast@gmail.com. And we will ask around. All right, let's take a break, Jake. When we return, we got a couple other moves to talk about. Nick Pivetta, Kenley Jansen, and so much more on this episode of Baseball Barbecue.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbecue. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schuster, and Alex Bregman was not the only one-time Boston Red Sox to sign a contract yesterday. Nick Pivetta.
Weird intro. Weird intro for Jake Mintz there.
Jake Mintz, weird though. I'm in the car yesterday with my wife's grandfather, and he goes, "Hey, do you know who Nick Pivetta is?" And I said, "Yeah." It's like,
sure do.
Hope
do
so.
You know sure. who Nick Pivetta is?
He's like, "He just signed with the Padres." And I said, "I know that happened 3 hours ago. Like I saw it."
How did he find out?
He got an alert on his phone, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, nice. A little bit behind.
You know old people these days.
Yeah.
Always on their phones.
Yeah, that's them. Nick Pivetta. This was right before Alex Bregman, at least in terms of when the reporting came out. As a pitcher who I just believed to be fairly underrated, has just been sitting out there, saddled by the qualifying offer. This seems to have been, every year there's one guy that got a QO that rejects a QO where teams are like, "Am I really going to give up a draft pick for this guy?" And the San Diego Padres, of all teams, who have spent barely any money amidst a very dramatic and messy offseason involving their ownership, but some level of resolution was reached when John Seidler, brother of Peter Seidler, was voted as the official control person. There are still pending litigation lawsuits involving Peter's widow, Shiel Seidler. That mess is still going on. But for now, it seems like the Padres have finally been given the go-ahead to at least attempt to complete an offseason in which they have otherwise done very little. They added to their position player group earlier this week with Connor Joe and Jason Hayward. And now they signed Nick Pivetta to a four-year deal, $55 million. You say 4 years? Nick Pivetta got 4 years. Nobody thought Nick Pivetta was going to get 4 years. Well, this is a very funny structure for a contract, as Nick Pivetta will be making very little money in the first year of the deal. I believe only like $3 or $4 million. And then it will be like $50 million over the remaining 3 years, which, from a luxury tax purpose, or, you know, the AAV is still high enough to where this is pushing the Padres' payroll still clearly above the first CBT line. But from a cash flow standpoint, which seems to still be an issue right now, the Padres do not have to pay Nick Pivetta very much right now. But they get him on their team, and I think this is a fantastic deal, not just because I like Nick Pivetta, but because even after they signed Hayward and whatever, I was way more concerned about the bottom of this pitching staff, particularly the rotation, than I was about the lineup. Yes, the lineup fell off hard after those top five or six, but to me, it was more of a concern that after King, Darvish, Cease, it was knuckleballer Matt Waldron, who we love, more on him later, but knuckleballer and Randy Vasquez, who had the lowest strikeout rate of any starting pitcher in baseball last year. That did not seem good enough for a team that still wanted to be one of the best teams in the National League. And I think Nick Pivetta, who's, I think, strikeout machine, has been durable, relatively durable, and his issues have just been homers. And, yes, there are maybe better pitchers' parks Petco is not as pitcher friendly as maybe it used to be, but it is still way more pitcher friendly than Pivetta's previous two stops in Boston and Philadelphia. And I think he makes this starting staff a whole lot better. I'm a huge fan of this contract.
Big win for Padres fans. Here's why. Padres fans who recently, understandably, get irked by a lot of things that happen in Dodger world, right? And what's one of the narratives going on with the Dodgers and Ohtani? Man, what a selfless guy. He left all his money on the table to take $2 million a year so that they could build a roster, and he's going to take the money later. Well, guess what, Dads fans? You have your Ohtani now, okay?
Yeah.
Every time your cousin, who's a Dodgers fan, is like, Ohtani is, you know, Mother Mary, because he wants to win. Well, all you got to do is point to your lanky Canadian three starter.
He's like, look, Dick Pivetta's making nothing so that we can keep paying Xander Bogaerts, you know, $25 million. Now, all of that is a great point. It's very funny. I will say, if this precedes a Dylan Cease trade, that would bum me out. I know Jeff Passan speculated as much, where it's like, okay, remember, folks, they're still trying to cut payroll. And Luis Arraez, Dylan Cease are the ways to do that. If you're only signing Nick Pivetta because you want to have some sort of backup for when you trade Dylan Cease, that would suck. And I guess that's extremely still possible, unless, again, then you're trading Dylan Cease for another young starter, which would probably have to be the case. But I hope that they can just keep this together and just roll with it and hope that they can avoid all injuries and have some bounce backs with some of the guys that have disappointed recently, like Cronenworth and Bogaerts, and hopefully, you know, still push here for a postseason spot, because I do think the top of this roster now still looks really, really, really strong.
The number one question everyone is asking, and maybe let's do this as a one dumb question segment. Who is more famous, new Padres starter Nick Pivetta or long-term NBA referee Dick Pivetta? This is something that I have thought about for quite a long time. The Nick Pivetta versus Dick Pivetta rankings. Now, for those of you unfamiliar with Dick Pivetta, he debuted as an NBA ref in 1975 and did not miss a game until 2014. He holds the league record for the most games ever officiated, 2635. Do we think he has surpassed Dick Pivetta? Has Nick Pivetta surpassed Dick Pivetta?
So, yeah, I mean, you know, Dick Pivetta hasn't ref for now almost, I think, 10 years. I mean, the guy's 85. So you're
basically running involved.
Asking if his legacy has sustained to the point where more people can still identify him. Like, if you just put the names on a sheet of paper in front of an average American, more people are able to identify that Dick Pivetta instead of Nick Pivetta. It's a great question. I think because of the timelines of their careers, it makes it a little bit difficult.
Email us.
Nick Pivetta's has been on the Red Sox. Like, he's pitched a lot of innings for one of the bigger profile teams. So, and now he's going to be an important part of a Padres team. So, I mean, who do more people know?
He's appeared in three postseason games. Okay. Pivetta,
how many finals did Dick Pivetta referee?
Way more.
A lot more than that.
Yeah.
Anyway, interesting. Let us know. I think there's also probably people listening to this that have definitely never heard of the referee, Dick Pivetta. So,
I mean, he's like the GOAT NBA. Like, he is the NBA ref.
I get it. But we're a little bit more removed from when you first came up with this concept, when he was like more in the NBA fan lexicon. I think it was more. It was actually funnier then, because at that point, nobody knew who Nick Pivetta was.
We knew who he was.
Nats prospect, Nick Pivetta, of course.
Yeah. Anyway. But Dick Pivetta's resume is complete, right? Like, his legacy is in stone.
Unless he
could save the world at 85. But, I don't want to count him out, you know, golden years. Yeah. But Nick Pivetta, I think, has a real chance here with the Padres to once and for all, you know, supersede Dick Pivetta. The Dick Pivetta argument, though, is he's the best NBA ref, or the most famous Pivetta, NBA ref ever. And Pivetta is like the 59th most famous MLB starting pitcher right now. So, like, just something to think about. Email us.
That is definitely one dumb question. One other that we want to talk about in this segment. We'll turbo mode a couple more later. Kenley Jansen signs with the Angels.
This one's so simple. It's actually
this
really simple.
So simple. So unsurprising. Kenley Jansen wants to be a closer. It sounds like there was some reporting that the Mets, some other teams had interest. Be like, hey, Kenley, we don't really want you to close anymore, but we think you could still help a bullpen. And he's like, no, I get saves. That's what I do. That's what I've done forever. I'm trying to climb the all-time saves leaderboard. And who's going to let me do that? The Angels.
All Kenley wants is for him to be sitting. He just wants to sit in that bullpen, okay? And he wants that phone to ring in the middle of the eighth, okay? And he wants some guy whose name...
Not a moment sooner. Don't you dare call him in the sixth.
That's not what he's here to do, okay? And he wants to get his big self into that game, and he wants to get those final three outs. He doesn't give a crap if it's for the Anaheim Angels or the Los Angeles Dodgers or the Los Angeles Angels or the Long Island Ducks or the North Dakota State Jackrabbits or whatever. I think that's South Dakota State. My apologies. As long as they're MLB saves and they count, Kenley Jansen wants them. I love this because he has a ring. He has more money than God, and he just wants saves. And I think that that's dope.
That's great.
I think it's so cool because so often players are like averse to admitting that they're stat chasing, right? There's kind of a vibe that you shouldn't do that.
No secret with Kenley.
But with Kenley, he's like when Russell Westbrook was like elbowing people in the mouth to pull down uncontested offensive rebounds to get his triple doubles. Like, this is good. Now, look, if Kenley still has the juice, he was pretty good last year. Like,
he's fine. I think he's still an above average closer.
He's like the 13th best closer in the league, right? Now, if he's the 13th best closer in the league this year and the Angels are totally, but it'll be an interesting conversation where it's like, okay, Kenley, do you want to get 14 more saves down the stretch for us? Or do you want to go play for the Tigers? Or do you want to go and like throw the sixth inning, right? Like, I'm very interested to see how it turns out. I could totally see a scenario where he gets dealt and is not happy about it because he just wants saves.
Totally. No, I could totally see that. Last thing on Kenley. So he's the active leader, 447 career saves. He's seven
That's
ahead
fourth
of Kimbrel.
Fourth all time.
He is...
Who's ahead of him?
31 behind Lee Smith. Does he pass Lee Smith in 2025?
No, but he will in 2026.
Okay, so he had 27 last year, 29 the year before that. So you think that he will pass Lee Smith. Then it's like another 100 before you get to, you know, Hoffman and Mariano in the 600 club.
But I think the real question is, do the Angels win 31 games?
Right. Does he get to 31 saves with the Angels? And are they relevant? Probably not. But Kenley Jansen, we are happy for you. More on the Angels later. Jake, you are in spring training.
I am.
I'm here. Not attended a camp yet, although I will be going to the Dodgers today. I got to Arizona yesterday. You've been down in Florida. You went to a couple days with the Yankees. That's where you are right now. Yeah. What are some just, you know, now that you've smelled it, you've tasted the amazing, you know, we're not even at Grapefruit League action yet, but
Tap water that tastes like you fell face first into the beach with your mouth open. Okay. And I've seen the light. Here's the deal. Okay. We'll talk about Yankees specific stuff later. Sneaky thing that I don't think people are talking about is that the Yankees just don't have a backup catcher. I think they want it to be Ben Rice, who we spent a lot of time talking about. Oh, best shape of your life. 93% of players look the same as when they did last year. Like, there was some picture going around of Gerrit Cole looking a little chubby. That's what he looked like last year. Like, Gerrit Cole is not stacked. He's got a little bit of flab on him. He's always had that. His shirt was too tight. Everyone relax. However, Ben Rice, who was playing first base for the Yankees last year, looks like two people now. He is
yoked. Okay.
In a good way. Great point. I think he put on like 20 pounds of muscle, clearly in an attempt to try and play more catcher so his body can hold up to it more. I think Ben Rice begins the season. The ideal situation for the Yankees for Ben Rice is to like Evan Gattis him, where he's catching like once every 2 weeks and he's like a bench bat and like Alex Jackson's the backup. Still, if Austin Wells gets hurt, like I am not feeling good about the catching options they have.
Well, that's the main takeaway. I mean, I don't know if they could. That would be a weird use of the roster, I think. Like, it's hard for me to imagine Ben Rice and Alex Jackson both being on the opening day roster, but I guess I could be wrong about that. Because, again, the bench, we're talking about Grisham and Peraza and LeMahieu and Oswaldo, whatever.
I think, like, deeper into the season, that's the alignment.
Sure.
Like, I think that part of the reason that Ben Rice showed up looking like a bodybuilder is because he wants to catch more and the Yankees want him to catch more. That's the point.
But I didn't know if that was a physical concern for Ben Rice versus just like literally how
well, it's good both, but like if your both, body, yeah. It's both.
Sure.
Other takeaway from being Yankees camp, the Rays are going to play here all season. Yeah. And you just see people walking around in Rays stuff because they have to build a baseball stadium. More on this later.
We haven't fully like processed the whole Sacramento Tampa situation in terms of just like those being major league stadiums. I think that it's one of the biggest stories of the year. And I think that it was when we had some of these situations with Toronto, right? During COVID, like this, there was a huge deal with it when Toronto was playing in Buffalo. Like, but for this situation, because it's extra weird, because it's actually where the Yankees are in spring training, it's bizarre. So I imagine it's an odd vibe in person.
No shade here. And I am fascinated how that will play.
Yeah.
Last point, driving by the Trop every day, every morning.
Yeah.
It's one thing to be like, wow, no, they can't play there. The thing doesn't have a roof, guys. Like, it's just striking to see like an enormous building that's broken like as part of a city skyline. And I would imagine, look, there are fewer people who live and die with the Tampa Bay Rays than maybe any other franchise, right? You could say the A's now because all the real A's fans are mad, understandably. That doesn't mean that people don't care. And like if Yankee Stadium or Fenway Park or Wrigley Field was in a state of disrepair from a natural disaster and it couldn't be used, like it would be an enormous deal. Now, obviously there's a difference between those teams and the Rays. The point I'm trying to make is like, that didn't totally hit me until I saw the building. And like, shouts out to Rays fans, like that sucks, dude. A place that holds that level of meaning and influence and purpose for you in your life, that like is your place that you care about, to see it like broken must suck. Now, look, it's no one's losing lives over it, that building, and like there are more important things in the world. It just, seeing it really reminded me of that fact.
Well, and also like the fact that even the remote possibility that they could somehow repair it and play there again is like almost impossible to comprehend.
Yeah, it's gonna take a while.
And there's a lot of things that go into that that are not just the logistical hurdles of repairing the roof, but that is another part of their situation that is unsettling and strange. So that makes sense. All right, Jake, let's take another break. When we return, Turbo Mode through some moves, good, bad, ugly, and I got some homework for Jake. We'll be right back.
And welcome back, Baseball Barbecast. Take the stick shift and throw it into nitro as I drive away fast down the street because it's turbo mode.
We are flying through some of the other moves around the league. Let's begin with the Miami Marlins making a major league free agent signing. Cal Quantrill, who has... I've been pitching in Colorado recently. That obviously has not been going super well. Kind of like this move. It's their first major league free agent signing. Love that. They're going to have someone throw innings when they continue to trade more pitchers, whether that's Sandy Alcantara, whether that's Edward Cabrera, whatever. And maybe, hey, whether it's Cal Quantrill. Cal Quantrill could absolutely pitch well for 2 months and then get traded in a very Eric Fetty style move. So I like that.
And what this means is the St. Louis Cardinals They have done it. They are the only team to not sign a major league free agent all winter long. Every other team has signed at least one. This was the Marlins first. So the Cardinals have done it. Raise the banner.
Yes. Cardinals, as Jeff Passan wrote, are, quote, I believe, confounding the industry with how they're handling their offseason. Nolan Arenado still on the team. They have a bunch of other veterans that we thought they were going to trade. They have signed nobody because the Brewers signed lefty Tyler Alexander to a major league deal. That is the Brewers' first deal, so it's not like the Brewers have been particularly active either. Anyway, Cardinals are being very, very, very weird. A couple reliever signings. Red signed Scott Barlow. Tigers signed John Brebbia. John Brebbia is a strange cat.
In a good way.
I'm looking forward to seeing him be amazingly good in this Tigers bullpen. The Twins signed Ty France. Oh, I love Ty France. Twins also have not spent a lot of money this offseason. They get Ty France, Harrison Bader, and Danny Coulomb. Oh, boy. I don't know. I would love to see Ty France have some success somewhere else. He's an easy guy to root for.
There are these French twins in my freshman class in college, and now I'm thinking about them.
Oh, nice. Love that. White Sox signed Michael A. Taylor. Will the White Sox trade center fielder Luis Robert Jr. before opening day?
No.
Okay. Dodgers sign Clayton Kershaw. No surprise there. He's already at Camelback Ranch despite not having an official contract yet. I'm honestly kind of surprised by that because he's not going to be ready to pitch like really anytime soon.
Yeah, but it doesn't surprise me.
It doesn't surprise me. I guess I'm surprised. Like if he was just there and there was no even reports of him having agreed to a new contract, that also wouldn't surprise me because he's Clayton Kershaw. He could go there wherever he wants.
Okay, so why is he signing now and not in the middle of the season? The reason Clayton Kershaw is signing now is so that he can rehab as a Dodger. Obviously, for him, he wants to make
some more official capacity.
Right. So that he wouldn't have been able to just use the Camelback Ranch facilities as a public citizen, you know?
Well, if anyone could.
It's like the video of the guy with the Jets where his key card doesn't work. Like, your key card's got to work. They got to have a locker. Like,
Kershaw probably has the master key to all Dodgers-related facilities. Yankee signed Tyler Matzik to a minor league deal. Have you seen him?
No, but okay. He's probably here.
But no, I
maybe
just because,
I did see him.
He's been injured basically for 2-3 years, but man, was that, I mean, oh boy, when Tyler Matzik had it cooking for Atlanta, it wouldn't shock me if he somehow throws 30 good innings for the Yankees this year.
I may have seen him, but he was clean shaven, so I don't know if I saw him, you know?
Ooh, more on that in a second. It's time for the good, the bad, the ugly. Something good, something bad, something Dan Ugla. As many people alerted us, Dan Ugla made an appearance on Pablo Torre's podcast recently.
Great show.
Great show. We love Pablo Torre. I watched a good chunk of it, and Dan Ugla seems like he'd be a good podcast guest, so we'll probably have to make that happen at some point. And we can have him on and not talk about arbitration. I'm sure he'd like to talk about other things.
Explaining to Dan Ugla that he's Ugla without insulting him is going to be a real,
like, I know. I disagree. I think the way to do it would just be like as part of the segment and then he just appears. But we'll see. Yeah. We'll try it. That'll be a good goal for this season. Okay. Anyway, something good, something bad, something Ugla. Let's start with something good, Jake. Go ahead.
Matt Waldron is a knuckleballer for the San Diego Padres. But he's like a weird knuckleballer because he only threw it 38% of the time last year. He showed up at camp this year and said, I think this is via Sammy Levitt on Twitter. Padres pitcher Matt Waldron, quote, I think I'm going to throw a little bit more knuckleballs this year and rely on that. Make them really respect that. Here's why this is good. At all times, MLB should have to have one knuckleballer. Okay.
Yes.
It is so cool. It is so different. It is so weird. It is so unique. It has such crossover potential to the point that, like, Patrick Mahomes tweeted a video of him throwing a football, like a knuckleball, and shouted out Matt Waldron. Like, great. Is Matt Waldron good? I don't really care. I just want him to throw 75% knuckleballs.
But this is the thing about him. Do you know what percent knuckleballs he threw last year?
I just said 38.
No, 38. Okay, sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you. That's the pretty thing. Low. I've always wondered, it's like, okay, a guy that like mixes in a knuckleball, it was still his primary pitch, but it's like, if you can do it, do it.
Like Wakefield was throwing it 75%
of course.
The time.
Yeah. Way more. Yeah, Dickie. Yeah. Same thing. So I agree. I know. I'm sure there's part of him that's like wants to show that he's more than just that, but it's like, dude, this is your superpower. Like lean into it. Let's see it happen. Although now again with Pivetta, we'll see if he's as guaranteed to have a rotation spot. So I'm glad he's leaning into that. I agree. That is good. My good this week. Daniel Vogel back. Is Daniel Vogel back with the Pirates as a special assistant hitting
very
coach,
special
something. I don't know exactly what the title is, but the point is Daniel Vogel back. His career is over. That is not good because what a career it was. 2019 Mariners icon. All-star.
Also not good.
Take that away from him.
Also not good because it makes me feel old because we saw him in low A.
True. He is my brother's favorite player because basically when my brother played baseball, he was basically Dan Vogelback when he was 10 in every sense.
Except without power.
And he looked just like him without him. But like Dan Vogelback, he often just stood there and took pitches. Nobody was more passive in the big leagues than Vogie. He almost played 10 years in the big leagues and obviously was very popular at many stops. And, you can understand why he became a bit of a meme, but, he's a beloved in every clubhouse. And it's cool that the Pirates brought him back. Makes sense. He's a, you know, Florida native, and I'm sure he wants to hang out in Bradenton, but I think sounds like he's going to be around the big league team a bunch. So
he's just going to stroll around Pirates camp, telling guys not to swing. Hey, knock that off. Don't do that.
Quick Vogie thing. 2019 All-Star Game, we did a pregame show, a live show for MLB on Twitter. I went back and watched it recently, and one of the funniest things about it was Vogie, it was right before the Home Run Derby is when we did the show, and Vogie was not in the Home Run Derby, and everyone assumed he would be in it, to the point where when we had Lucas Giolito come over and talk to us, he just assumed, like, we asked him, oh, who's going to win the Derby tonight? And he was like, well, Vogelback. And he's like, or he said Vogelback. He's like, yeah, I went in and talked to Vogie, and I was like, oh, you excited for the Derby? And he's like, I'm not doing it. So he just straight up assumed he was doing it, because why wouldn't he? So that's obviously a missed opportunity, but Vogie, we love you, and I'm excited to see. Maybe you'll see him if you go to Pirates camp. Let me know if you got eyes on Vogie.
What's bad? Devin Williams shaved. Boo. Devin Williams, who was dealt from the Milwaukee Brewers to the New York Yankees, one of the best closers in the world, a key part of the great Bronx pivot in the wake of Juan Soto's departure. Devin Williams rolled into day zero of Yankees camp on Tuesday with a beard. Obviously, the Yankees have an asinine, archaic, outdated facial hair restriction that dates back to 1973 when George Steinbrenner bought the team and was looking at his lineup and didn't like how scruffy they looked. He thought it was unprofessional. George Steinbrenner, who went to a military academy?
Huh? George M. George M. Steinbrenner.
George M. Steinbrenner. Thank you. George, who went to a military academy, then copy and pasted that onto the Yankees, restricting both facial hair below the lip and hair that touches the back of the neck. This ruling was really only notably challenged twice by Don Mattingly in 1991 and by Clint Frazier, hilariously, very briefly in a spring training one time. And then when Devin Williams showed up on day zero, everyone was like, oh my God, is he going to do it? No, he's not. He was only here for a physical. There were no baseball activities. He did not put on a uniform. And so when he showed up yesterday for day one, it was shaved. And that sucks because this rule is stupid and players are going to do what they want. And I get why Yankee World feels they need to uphold it to honor George Steinbrenner's memory. But guess what? There's a stadium with his name on it. Like
the Rays play there.
2025. The Rays play here.
But that's the thing. It's like, it's
do the Rays all have to be clean shaven to play here?
That's the thing. It's just like, that's how we're honoring George Steinbrenner. Like, that's the one thing that we just can't change. Like, it's embarrassing on many levels, but whatever. I don't know. Someday it will end and I don't know when or why, but
it was just a little glimpse. It was like just seeing Devin Williams walking around Yankee World for 5 minutes with a beard, like, just filled me up with joy.
Yeah. But then it was bad. It was good, and then it was bad. My bad this week is another spring training tradition. Oh, all your favorite players are walking into camp. Oh, my God, I miss them so much. Oh, my God, baseball's back. They're playing catch. Ooh, who's injured?
Who had surgery?
Whose elbow is sore? Oh, damn it. You know, that's unfortunately a big part of this week, is finding out who was secretly hurt, finding out who's not feeling good after their first day of catch, and realizing that injuries are a part of sports, and particularly baseball and pitchers. However, the most notable injury that, of course, most people are talking about right now is that Anthony Rendon, once again, will not be playing baseball anytime soon, as he is, I guess, about to have hip surgery, or recently had hip surgery, continuing what has been a catastrophic tenure with the Angels of Anaheim, sort of Los Angeles. This is bad for obvious reasons. I don't think Anthony Rendon, like, again, there's no shortage of people dunking on him and making jokes about how he doesn't like baseball and, you know, all these things. A lot of that's probably valid. This is just such a disaster and just disappointing and a bummer for a player that, folks, was really, really, really good. He didn't get the contract by accident. It might not have been a good idea, but my gosh, was this a hell of a baseball player whose career will now be essentially largely just lost to people that were not watching the Nationals at those times or didn't have any strong connection to that 2019 team. And it's
that's
shame.
His own dumb fault. I disagree.
I don't feel bad.
I'm gonna argue
for some
you.
Ways, but he certainly hasn't done himself any favors in the way that he's handled, in the way that he's talked about these things, and the way that he's kind of taken the responsibility of the contract and being a part. There's plenty of reasons to criticize him. At the same time, this is just like. This doesn't make me dislike him more because he needs hip surgery again. I'm just like, this is just bad. It's bad. It's a bad thing.
Sure. Do you genuinely believe that Anthony Rendon is doing everything he needs to do to get his body ready to play? No chance.
Okay. I don't know if that's why he needs hip surgery, but sure.
Okay. I'm not saying this specific thing, but he's missed all this time. Most players, when they get hurt for whatever reason, obviously, like, you can't blame them. They deserve the benefit of the doubt. Rendon has lost that by how he has handled things, in my opinion, because he has straight up said, I don't like to do this. He has not shown interest. He has not taken any kind of responsibility. He didn't return frickin' Ron Washington's phone call. Like, I'm sorry. I if you don't like baseball, that's okay. Don't accept $200 million to play it for a living. Like, I find it very hard to be sympathetic towards Rendon just because of how blatant he's been about this.
Yeah, that's fine.
And like,
I mean, I'm not feeling bad for him. I'm just marveling at the fact that it's honestly, the farther away we get from it, it's like astonishing how good he was and what it was for any point for this kind of for now the what we understand to be the how he viewed the sport and how he was doing it. So anyway, one of the stranger, yeah, I mean, it's one of the most. If that's it, this could be it. It's possible Anthony Rendon has played his last game. And if that's true, what a unique career and just bizarre fall off that you are about to describe. Because again, he finishes third in MVP in that last year with the Nats. He's amazing in the playoffs. And since then, go ahead, tell the people.
Since then, here are some people with more home runs. Nick Gordon, Brett Phillips. Has more home runs.
Since the start of this Angels contract, this $245 million contract.
Jackson Merrill.
Jackson Merrill was, I mean, what was he, like a sophomore in high school when he signed this contract?
Watching the Nats. Bo Naylor is a funny one.
Oh,
to
Naylor.
Me.
Oh, my God.
Mike Ford. Here's the one kills me. Cesar Hernandez. Okay. Hit more major league home runs since Anthony Rendon signed his contract.
But the other thing about it is that Rendon was amazing that first year. It was just the shortened season. So he only hit 9 homers. But yeah, since then, obviously just a downright catastrophe. And the fact that Steven Strasburg signed the same contract at the same time and played even less, but obviously that carries different connotations and kind of tragedy with that one. But it's an amazing reality that those two guys signed the same contract and what happened after the fact.
Ugla. People need to begin appreciating the profit that is Mark Vientos.
Oh, wow. Tell me more. Vientos. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Is playing on a different plane. Quote, I love the expectations. I love the pressure. I love people rooting for me or rooting against me. It motivates me to work harder. Mark Vientos, dude, he's finding those chips. He's putting them on his shoulder. I love people rooting for me or against me. Is amazing. That's an amazing line.
Normally, it's like, let the haters fuel you. But he's like, no. Everything's fueling me.
I love it. It's all fuel for Mark Vientos. Vientos is, there are Castellanos type threads in here. Okay. And we're going to start seeing it more and more. Yes. Keep an eye on this.
As a player, okay? Too.
The only thing he hates is people who aren't thinking about him. Right.
Oh.
Love me or hate me, just think about me. But I bet you he uses that as fuel too.
I was going to say, I think those people are motivating him also so that he can make them think about him for better or for worse. So I agree. Keep it going, Mark. My ugly this week is college baseball related. College baseball's back. We'll talk more about that next week. But there is one ugly situation. Did you see what is going on with one Eric Backich this weekend?
No, please inform me.
Eric Backich is the head coach at Clemson University. Eric Backich got ejected at the end of their season last year in the regional in a situation I don't need to recap. But the point is, such ejections come with suspensions, which means that Eric Backich is suspended for the first two games of the 2025 season. Clemson is competing in a tournament, I believe, at Globe Life, and Eric Backich will not be able to coach the first two games. That's a little ugly on its own, but what's really ugly is that Eric Backich will be on the call, the radio call for the Tigers for the first two games. Apparently, they're doing it like remotely, like from across the street or from the hotel, because I guess he's not allowed in the ballpark. He's literally not, he's barred from the stadium. I don't know if that's why they're doing the radio broadcast separately or if they're doing, I don't know exactly the situation, but the point is that Eric Backich will be on the Clemson call for the first two games, which is just, that's as ugly as it gets. And college baseball is back.
Not to make everything about me, but this reminds me of a story when in college I was on the call and got called to warm up. While I was broadcasting the game, where they were like, hey, Jake, coach wants you hot. And so I got to say on the mic, all right, now warming up in the bullpen is me.
Gotta go.
Gotta go.
All right, Jake, before we get out of here, it's time to give you some homework. You gave me some homework to come up with the alternate reality where Patrick Mahomes picked baseball. I delivered that earlier this week. This assignment is very simple. I understand you were going to Orioles camp soon.
Yeah.
At some point. My assignment for you, and this can be for Monday or if you need a couple more days, I don't know how many days you're doing with the Orioles, you can do this. I want to know who Tomoyuki Sugano has become friends with. One of my favorite things about Japanese players coming over and signing with different teams is the unexpected friendships that they form with some of the players on the roster. It's almost impossible to predict who these players ends up being. Of course, one of the famous ones, Kikuchi and Daniel Vogelbach, were extremely tight with the Mariners to the point where Kikuchi, I believe, named his son after Daniel. So anyway, I would love to know. Sugano a little bit different because he's a little bit older, but I would love to know who Sugano has become friends with. I know it's early. Maybe it's obvious. Maybe it's not. I want to know about the early days of Sugano with the Orioles.
Okay, great. That's great homework. The only hope is that like Felix Bautista names his first kid Tomoyuki.
So a lot of candidates. Maybe it will be another pitcher, maybe another catcher, maybe it'll, maybe it's Ryan O'Hearn, you know? So you can go find that out. Thank you all for listening to this episode of Baseball Barbacast. Thank you to producer Andrew Hartz, as always, for making it possible. Thank you to the George M. Steinbrenner Press Box and the Fairfield Inn here in Phoenix for allowing us to make these shows possible with the magic of the internet. I will be at Dodgers camp, Cubs camp, a few others over the next few days. Hope everyone has a wonderful weekend, and we will talk to you all next week.